You are extremely vigorous for your age. You're working. And let's face it, you're a survivor. How many people
That's right.
Your age are
survivors
functioning the way that you do?
Right.
There are people your age, but they're not going to work and riding the bus and so forth. What are your secrets? What do you attribute all this vigor to?
I can't put my finger on any one particular thing, but I'll put it this way. I like people. I have always been a gregarious individual. Mm-hmm. If I don't like you, we'll say, we just don't see eye to eye, I don't go around and rub shoulders and let the sparks fly. I'd rather walk across the street, live and let live. Mm-hmm. And I've never put myself in a place or position where I would say, he's nothing, I'm better than he is, or what have you. And no matter what his bad qualities are, he probably has a few good qualities too. And I can live with that. Mm-hmm. I'd say I don't have to live with him, I don't have to go to bed with him or anything like that, but I can stand him. And that's part of it. I just can't go beyond that.
I think you're saying that you don't let yourself get involved in angry and stressful situations. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yes. I've always said I'm an early settler. My folks missed the Mayflower. We came over to the June Flower. And that's what I'm, so far as I'm concerned, in my law practice. I've always seen the other fellow's side of the picture. Mm-hmm. And I worked out many, many a compromise that would be awfully difficult for someone else to try to handle, because I can give and take in a situation. I don't ask for the world, and I'm not envious of anyone. I hope everyone gets along and all that sort of thing. And I think it's back. That's probably most of it. I'm somewhat like my father. I mean, he got along with everyone in the small town. After all, he was a Jew in a small town, yet he became active in the school board and was the only Jew to become a Mason in Connorsville all these many years. There's stories I hear about him, and it's just something in his nature. Get along with people. Don't look for the worst. On the basis that I'm just as good as the next guy, but I'm no worse than the next guy. Just one of those things. Uh-huh. I don't look for faults.
But sometimes everybody has lived through stressful situations.
Oh, sure.
Certainly the death of your first wife was a stressful situation.
Definitely.
How did you deal with that?
Well, at that time, Betty Ann was a freshman at Wellesley. She'd only been away a month. Her mother had had this heart condition from the time she became pregnant with Betty Ann. Never had any other children. Couldn't. The doctors said absolutely nothing doing. And when she passed away, I had always been living with my father-in-law, mm-hmm. Ben Cohn, and he was a widower. And we went to work at the same time in the morning. We came home at the same time. And there was a certain feeling between us. I don't know. I had a great respect and liking for him. He was a gentleman. He was clean as a whistle. You just couldn't live with that man in the same house and not have some of his good qualities rub off on you, if you know what I mean. He was a decent individual, and thought more of he didn't think of his shoe department in Coffin. He thought of the store. Is this good for the store?
Uh-huh.
He looked for the broad view of the thing, and somehow or other, I think I absorbed some of those qualities.
Some of your father's philosophy,
yes.
Too, obviously. With the exception of the death of your first wife, did you have any other terribly stressful time in your life?
No, it's an odd thing. My folks were married in 1887 here in Pittsburgh, migrated to Connorsville, opened a little men's furnishing and clothing store, later got into the hotel business and left there in 1920 when Prohibition came in because liquor was out. My father didn't want to get into that calling of bootlegging, what have you, and moved back to Pittsburgh. And I mention that because here was a family of 10 children growing up, and no breaks in the family.
Wait, there were 10 children in your family?
There were originally 12.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. There's 12 that I know that I've told about. There's my oldest brother was a twin. The twin boy died at the age of 6 months before I was born, naturally. And then I had a baby sister who died here in Pittsburgh in 1907. That was a boy and a girl. There's five boys and five girls who grew up together. And no break in the family for 50 years or more. Because in 1937, when the folks celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, they had moved to Atlantic City in 1928 and lived there until they passed away. And in 1937, was the 50th, where the entire family gathered there, their five boys and their respective, and their spouses, the girls with their other ones who were married, a couple were not married. And Mrs. Barnett Davis, founder of the Ladies Auxiliary, mm-hmm. the Ladies Hospital Aid, and she and her son Jake Davis, and I just kick this around every once in a while, she had been the forelady in the shop that made garments of some kind. My mother was a seamstress. My mother was an orphan, and living with a sister came to this country. And she'd owned my mother her wedding dress. And she said, she showed up at this dinner we were having, a family dinner, and said, I was at the wedding 50 years ago, and I'm here tonight. And Jake and I reminisce about this from time to time. But that's kind of a background, you know. So I had
really... How many in your family still survive?
Five.
And what was your place in the family?
I'm either seven or eight, by that I mean, if you figure the twin, one twin, is one of the children, I would be number eight.
Otherwise, are the other survivors in their 70s?
No, they're all my youngest brother, youngest in the family is about 72, I would say, living in Atlantic City, on the countryside there. He never married that I know of. And I have this sister in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the one that is 78. And I have the two up at the home for the age of my sister up there is 80. She has passed March. And I have another older brother, Aaron, who's about 85.
And the ones who are deceased, at what age did they? Were there any?
My sister, Esther, was the first one passed away. She passed away in 1954. My mother died a week later. Mm-hmm. My brother Lou, who must have been about 20 years ago now, I would say about maybe in the late 60s, early 70s.
Did they die of things that today could be corrected?
Esther, my sister, cancer of the lungs. She had never smoked a cigarette in her life. Mm-hmm. And just walked into one of those trucks that go by that say, step in and have your... get a checkup or something, and she had been a year before John Hopkins, third examination, nothing there. And they said, you better see your doctor. And apparently, she for about a year, then she passed away. And Brother Lou, the same thing happened to him, cancer, in Florida at the time. He and his wife had a shop in Palm Beach, mm-hmm. in Atlantic City in the summertime, Palm Beach in the wintertime. And my sister Seal, as you may have known the family, she lived and married a McKeesport man, Mike Goldberg, whose brother...
Yes, Dr. I know who that is.
Dr. Sam Goldberg, mm-hmm. and then was Alan Safer was a nephew, and all that sort of... Dr. Alan Safer, Milton mm-hmm. Safer. And then my sister Lil, who was the oldest, she died just a natural... Both she and my sister Seal died a natural death, just at old age, and they were in their 80s.
Mm-hmm. Were your parents long life?
My father was 81, and my mother 88.
And so they were for that generation.
Oh yes, they're only a year apart in their age. My father was born in 1865, my mother in 1866, what I can gather. And my mother had two sisters.
Were they born in this country?
No. They're all born overseas. Mm-hmm. And my father never saw his parents after he left the age of 13. The Russians would grab you and put you in the army at the age of 13 in Poland, Polish Jews, Litvaks, so-called. And he landed in Baltimore at the age of 13, got a couple of jobs. Imagine a kid in the 13, never saw his parents again, the only boy in the family.
Not unusual in that age.
Landed in Baltimore, got a job in a brickyard, work was too heavy, got a job rolling stogies. Dust started to affect his lungs, tobacco dust. Somebody gave him a pack and peddled his way to Pittsburgh. Peddled around here for a couple of years, met mother, married her, and moved to Collinsville.
So you have a good heritage, and that certainly is in your favor.
Yes.
What do you do now to maintain your health?
Not much of anything. Since I lost my eyesight.
When was that?
This past year. I'm blind, officially blind. I can see all this kind of stuff. I can't see your face. I couldn't recognize you unless I knew you were who you were to begin with. This came this past year. Blood vessels in the eyes, not operable. I have these fancy glasses where it has a button on them that, for magnifying purposes, but it doesn't do too much of a job. You see that button? But I go to work. I don't do any paperwork anymore. I refer my work to other lawyers that I feel are capable in a particular field. And I go across the street for lunch to Colonnade and sit and talk to the boys.
Come on. Cross the street with them.
I can cross the street. If I have to keep an eye to the traffic that I don't cross in the center of the street as I do from the Frick Building to the Union Trust Building. Mm-hmm. But I do that. And I walk over to every day to where Brooks Brothers to get the bus. I purposely want to walk. I want to get some exercise. Or walk the whole way down Fifth Avenue to Liberty Avenue, where old Rosamond store was, and get the bus there right home. But since I quit playing golf, which was just a year ago, I have slackened up so far as exercise is concerned. I have a little bit of Parkinson's. I can't do anything. So that doesn't bother me. I just walk around.
When did this develop?
The last couple of years.
And
a little bit of a stroke. In fact, a couple of fingers. I can't do much of anything. These fingers, I can just.
Can you write?
I'm right-handed. Although I was born left-handed, I write right.
Yeah. Was the sight a gradual thing?
Yes. I one day the ophthalmologist said to me, "You don't do any reading with your right eye." I didn't think anything about it. Okay, my left eye. Then all at once it started to go, and it wasn't until last April, I think it was. I went out to the country club. I couldn't see the golf ball. And then I started going. He sent me to Ford Ophthalmologist downtown, and then to the hospital for a checkup and all that sort of thing. And they all came up with the same answer. So my friends said, "Why don't you go to Boston? Why don't you go to New York? Hey, we know this one. We know that one." But I haven't done that. Miami, Florida is supposed to have an eye clinic of some kind, Miami Beach. But it's I'm living with it, and I'm a gutsy sort of a guy. I'm not crying about it, you know. I'm telling you because you're asking me.
Does it affect, your position and I
can pick up the paper here. I can read the morning paper by going this way. The Pittsburgh Press, a different print. I just can't do much of anything with that. And if I get close to the television set, pull up the chair over there about this far away, maybe this far away, I can see the faces.
But I was asking, does it affect your disposition, I would think it would.
I don't think so. Ellie could best answer that, I suppose.
No, I think you know. Do you have a lot of controls?
Yes. I'll just put it this way. Ellie says, I can blow my top and give everybody ulcers, and 5 minutes later, you're fine.
Well, that's good you can do that.
I said, but which is probably true. Uh-huh. I have a short fuse in a sense. Uh-huh. I resent, I don't know how to put it exactly. I don't just know the answer to it. I can't think of hurting anyone. I'm shy about hurting people. I see someone else who can be brash and all that, and it doesn't go down well with me. That's about the size of it.
Well, certainly you're fortunate in that you're not alone.
No.
You live with a mate.
That's right.
You have a natural child and some stepchildren around.
Yeah. My stepchildren, I can say honestly and fairly, I think they all are crazy about me, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
I've been a very decent...
How old were they when you got married?
Janet was 15. Jack was 15. Janet was 13. And Connie, who was born in 37, now she's 43. She was 9.
Oh.
9, 13, and 15. And Betty Ann was a freshman at Wellesley when I... when her mother passed away, she was 17. Now Betty Ann's 52.
So you really more or less raised Connie.
Yes.
And yeah. The others you had to guide through adolescence, and yeah. They were stepchildren.
That's right.
Coming to you at a hard time.
That's right.
How did that work out?
I had no trouble at all. I mean, the kids seemed to like me from the beginning. As a matter of fact, they tell a story about this Mary who's been with us for 43 years. She started out as a nurse girl for Connie. When we were getting married, the day that we were married, they told Mary, the three of them, that they no longer were going to call me Uncle Barney, they're going to call me Daddy.
Aww.
And she says, he may be Daddy to you, because he's going to be Uncle Barney to me. But as I said, me now, I have no trouble with her. I think she really loves me. I've been pretty nice to her.
Of course, I have stepchildren. They're adults.
Yeah.
I have stepchildren.
Yeah.
And I'm just feeling. I just didn't feel all that responsible.
I can understand it. Well, Betty Ann's a good girl. I mean, if we're off the record, have no problems there, and...
They respected you. Of course, it wasn't a divorce. That makes a difference,
that's
too.
Right.
There
that's
was nobody
right.
you were that's competing with.
That's
you were in
right.
charge. And they were probably glad to have a father.
Oh, yes. I was active at the country club in those days, and they were out there quite a bit, and I was secretary of the club, and they thought that was a great honor,
uh-huh.
that kind of a deal. I was running the show, more or less. And it was one of those things, but...
And you continued your
never any harsh words. I learned, I must tell you something. I went down to Atlantic City to tell my mother I was going to remarry. She was a widow at this point. My father died 30 days after my wife.
Mm-hmm.
My father dropped, went to sleep, never awakened, during the night. And he never knew that my wife had died. Because they're always worried down there. Oh, Pop, you can't tell Pop, you can't tell Mother. Well, every time I saw Mother after that for the next couple of years, I was down there fairly often. She'd ask, how about Pearl? I said, well, she's not well enough to travel, Mother, and all that sort of stuff,
Uh-huh.
Well, I went down there and I told her I was going to I spoke the news to her, and she cried a little bit. So I was going to remarry, and so who was my wife was to be, has three children. She says, I only have one bit of advice to give you. A mother's children come first. And don't forget that even if you have to bite a hole through your tongue and keep them lashing out at them.
Uh-huh.
And I remembered that.
Uh-huh.
And I acted accordingly. And there was never any trouble. Never any trouble. Because I remember certain times you feel you want to lash out a little bit
uh-huh.
and say something.
Uh-huh.
But I control myself pretty well.
Now, here you were raising more or less three children, yeah. three stepchildren, and you had one child of your own. Did religion play a part in your life? How were you raised, and what kind of a culture?
I was bar mitzvah. My mother, my father went into the hotel business, insisted on keeping a kosher house, and my father built a wing onto the hotel in Connersville. It was our quarters, and where Mother could have her kosher kitchen.
So they were Orthodox.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes. But my father, having come over so early, at the age of 13, he spoke excellent English, no accent whatsoever, didn't have the Jewish features, if you might say, and was really a handsome man, and got along beautifully with everybody in the town. He was active in the charity affairs, everything. I remember when he had the clothing store, which was always a beautiful store, but no schlock shop. Christmas time, he was chairman of the charities committee of the Elks. And the Elks in Connersville was almost as important as the Masons. And he's the one who handed out the tickets for coal for the poor people, baskets of food for the poor people, and they loved him. And I have in my safety deposit vault, I did have, and I'm pretty sure I still have, the headline in the Connellsville papers, two of them there, Sam Goodman leaves Connellsville. I went on to say what
he... Is the headline in the paper?
The headline.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. And,
You were raised Orthodox.
Oh, yes.
Then
oh, yes. The boys grew up with Chiu. Came the second day of Rosh Hashanah. We weren't going to, go out
that
and play. We would go out to watch a football game or do whatever we wanted to do. Uh-huh. My father always, so far as my mother was concerned, he had peddled and probably had slept in hay miles. Any place where you get a bite to eat or a place to sleep, a straw tick or something. And it didn't bother him at all, so far as that was concerned. But my mother, that's what she wanted, that's what she's going to have. And that was it. So when I came to school, I was... Yes. Uh-huh. When we were in the hotel business, we ate in the regular dining room. As I'm talking about my brothers, my sister. We were in there. We trafe didn't mean a thing to us. Ate anything that came along. My father was a mixer, well-liked. He was in on everything in the town, the activities of the town, and they respected him. And if any Jew got into trouble, my father was the first one they ran to. He would go up to court to Uniontown. He was the interpreter. He was helped him out
of
the right
way. So he had the Jewish consciousness.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Which you have had yourself.
Yes, yeah. He was something special.
Are you a member of a Reformed temple
here? Oh, Road of Sholem, I've been for many, many years.
And this is how Betty Ann was raised.
Yes.
And I guess Ellie was also.
Yes, that's right. She's Road of Sholem. My father, when he came to Pittsburgh, he joined the Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And was also, I think, a member of Beth Sholem.
So then he had become conservative. Tree of Life was conservative.
It was because he never was a member of the temple here, anything like that. It wasn't his nature. He liked to daven, came to the holidays. He observed.
The Tree of Life is not Orthodox, it's conservative.
No, it was conservative. Right. He was always that nature.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He bought the old church in Connellsville, made it into the synagogue, an old church. That was his. He was always in on things. He was always doing something. Politics the same way. He got involved in politics from one end of the state to the other. Harrisburg, Philadelphia. He was a mixer.
So, you would not really characterize yourself as, aside from your social responsibility, which is reflected in your activities at the home, as a religious person.
No.
Rite of Sholem is the Reformed Temple is really a small part of your life. What about in your home?
Same thing, same way.
Uh-huh.
I'm not. Observing. I personally fast each year more or less as a challenge when it comes to Yom Kippur.
I like that too.
just to take a day off. But I was active in the men's club at the temple, and they wanted to move me up, and I resigned. I quit. I actually was the speech writer for Dr. Ben Miller, the dentist, who's now B.B. Miller's father.
Yeah.
I used to write his speeches for him and all that sort of thing. But I was bored to tears with it. I was sitting in the back of the meeting room down at the temple and returning the pages of the unabridged dictionary looking for words.
Uh-huh.
It was just
so
funny.
It's not really meaningful.
No, that's right.
I'm very
generous in a sense with my contributions to Hillel, the Tree of Life, one down on Fifth Avenue, what do they call that one down there on Fifth Avenue on the way to town?
The synagogue.
No, the school.
It's a...
It's minimum, something or other.
Yeah. And you contribute there,
there and also to the one at the Hillel and to the one at Yitzchak something or other now on Bartlett Street. I get $50. They give them $100 whenever they come in there.
How are you on all their lists?
The door is open. I don't turn them down.
No. So you have there's no question, you have a very strong identity as a Jew.
Yes. Yeah, everyone always knew where I stood at it. I never ducked the idea that I wasn't, if you know what I mean. And they respect you more for that, too, I find.
I think so.
Yes. I have never found it to hurt me in any way, shape, or form. Off the record again, I've been offered membership in...
And I'm going to say this is a backup, something to fill in from the previous tape. You had mentioned your eagerness to volunteer in the First World War. Now, of course, we've seen such a social change. How do you feel about this, about the volunteer army and about young men being so resentful of any kind of draft?
Personally, I think it's a sad situation in American life. As I said, I volunteered in the First World War. It was a thing to do. You just had to go in there. The Germans kept going the same way in the Second World War. The Nazis and the Jewish Holocaust and all that sort of thing. Desire to serve and do something. And all Americans were alike. I mean, they were united. Now, in the past 20 years or 30 years, I would say, the feeling I just read or heard yesterday that... so many percentage wouldn't serve, and this one wouldn't do this, so on the other. I don't know what has happened to the youth of America today. Patriotism is not in their book.
It's the me generation.
Yes. I was happy to hear the cheering that went on yesterday about the landing of the airship. Because I thought, well, maybe this will be experiencing. Mm-hmm. And I thought for a moment, maybe a day or so after Reagan was shot, that there was a sort of a pulling together of people, you think it'd be great. But I'm a little bit heartsick about that. I just can't swallow it.
Do you see it as weakening our country?
I definitely think so. I'm very afraid for the future. I'm afraid for my children and grandchildren, let's put it that way. I don't know what the future holds for them. And... the way our economy is today, anything can happen. And it's equally true around the world, I guess. It's just a change with this air of money came into the situation and it's changed things tremendously. I don't know whether you've read this week's issue of Time Magazine.
I've read it, but not from cover to cover.
Well, the cover has a picture of the Diana.
Yes. And it says she's bringing us... cohesiveness to Great Britain.
That's right. I was hoping something like that. I like the idea that maybe she's a virgin.
She's a charming young woman.
Yeah.
She really is.
Apparently her mother had a very stinking... According to the article, I didn't read it all.
Her parents had a
bad divorce. A messy divorce or something like that, they said.
It's going to be very interesting to see the way a wedding is handled.
Yeah.
I think.
We were over there a few years ago when they had remember the famous Chinese exhibit or something like that? People walk all around the block to get into
the
place.
You mean the Egyptian. You mean the
Chinese. No, the Chinese, yes. We were there, and that particular day, something was happening, I think, with a wedding or something.